think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
We're going over to New York now because our first guest has written a thrilling and previously untold story of Suzanne Spark, who abandoned her life of opulence to save the Jewish children of occupied Paris during the Second World War. To tell us about it from her book titled Codename Suzette, please welcome to the show Anne Nelson. Thanks for joining us, Anne.
Thank you.
Now, I'm guessing that was her code name then, if that's the title. Her code name was Suzette, was it?
The way that her co-workers in the underground said was that that was the name they used for her in the underground. So that's how we translated it.
Ah, okay. And what made you interested in writing about her?
I think that sometimes I join other people in feeling a certain amount of despair about the world, and I look for people who can be examples. And I felt that Suzanne Spock was a very inspiring figure because of her selflessness and her courage.
Yeah, I agree. From what I've read, from what I've been sent before we had a chat, I mean, she was born into a very affluent Belgian Catholic family, wasn't she?
Yes, she was. And yet she always had a great deal of sympathy for people who were less privileged than she was. She was also raised to be a very fine lady with servants and really not a lot expected of her. And she was dissatisfied with that role. In that way, I found her a very modern, surprisingly modern woman.
And didn't she marry into politics?
Yes, her family was very distinguished on both sides. Her father was a wealthy financier, and she married into the leading family of the Belgian political class. I suppose they would be like the Churchills in Britain or the Kennedys in the United States. The Spocks had prime ministers, other ministers, senators, really any political office you could imagine.
And how did this life, this double life, I suppose, effectively she ended up leading, how did it come about?
Well, you know, it came about, I believe, through a failure in her personal life. She married a member of the Spock family. Her brother-in-law, Paul-Henri Spock, would be prime minister of Belgium several times. Her other brother-in-law was the celebrated screenwriter of Grande Illusion and Charles Spock. The youngest brother was not as successful. He was also not a very admirable husband. He had mistresses from the beginning, one of whom he moved in with the wife and children. And Suzanne found solace with one of her friends who happened to be a Jewish Polish intellectual. So once they had moved into Paris, the Nazis invaded, her Jewish friends were threatened and then arrested, and she dealt with it by really hurling herself into the Jewish resistance, even though she wasn't Jewish and she wasn't in particular danger herself.
Yes, that is strange, isn't it? It's not like you say, if she was Jewish herself, you could understand it a bit more, but this is truly a selfless person.
Yes, I think it was a true humanitarian instinct. The other thing was that she was truly galvanized when she realized that the children, the Jewish children, were in danger. One thing I try very hard to do in the book is to understand the historical context and the way that people could not have foreseen the Holocaust in 1940 or 41 because it really hadn't been implemented yet. So I try to discover what is happening in France along with the people in the book. So it's in 1942 when these realizations come crashing down on people.
She did, as you say, with other women, we have to say she didn't do it alone, with other brave women. They saved hundreds of Jewish children literally from the gas chambers.
They did. And another inspiring aspect of it is that these women were a real mixture. You had the wives of bankers, and you had Jewish factory women in this extensive network that would be Protestant, Catholic, Jewish, communist, all working together towards this common humanitarian end, which I also think is a model for our time.
So how literally, I mean, I don't know how extensive your research is, but how literally did they do it? Because they were under the scrutinizing eyes of the Gestapo, and they must have had to literally kidnap these kids.
They did. It was very complicated. Most of the Jewish population in France at the time lived in Paris. And one of the things that I explore in the book is the way that immigrants, especially immigrants from Eastern Europe, were targeted first. The Vichy government was more reluctant to allow French-born Jews to be deported. And so the authorities went really nationality by nationality through the arrondissement of Paris with their arrests. So when the network that Suzanne Spock organized set out to rescue the children, they would hide them in Paris for a few nights, and then filter them out to countryside homes that looked after them for the rest of the occupation. There was one point where she and her Jewish colleagues found out that there were going to be mass arrests of children from orphanages outside central Paris. These were institutions that had been run by the Rothschilds before the occupation and were turned into holding pens for children for deportation. So Suzanne Spock and her friends organized this, what they called le kidnapping, on one account of over 60 children in one day. And it was just an extraordinary operation. I believe it was the most audacious single operation of its kind.
How I'm trying to work out how she managed to keep it a secret. If she was leaving this double life, presumably her husband, her family, nobody else knew what she was doing.
Well, the network did, and she also had friends that she involved in her enterprise. One of them was her downstairs neighbor, the great writer Colette. And Colette is an important figure in my book. I believe that she has been misjudged in the histories of the occupation, and Colette provides a very interesting story. So remember, there were only 3,000 German police, Gestapo, in France for a country of 40 million. So you really had to have the complicity of the French police to implement the deportations, but you also had various French officials who opposed them. So it was a very porous situation where you saw the best and the worst of human nature.
Yeah. It's Andrew Nagorski, who is the author of The Nazi Hunters, says she had almost superhuman courage. Do you think that's a good way to describe her?
Well, I spent really some 8 years researching this. I interviewed her daughter some 30 times and other family members. So I spent a lot of time with Suzanne Spock. I do feel she was extremely courageous, but also in terms of her psychology, she came from a world of privilege, and in some ways I think she felt immune, that they wouldn't touch her for various reasons, and she was not correct in that.
No.
The other thing about her story is that I came to this from a rather unusual background. I had been a war correspondent in El Salvador and Guatemala in the 1980s. I did reporting for the BBC and U.S. and Canadian news organizations. And so I saw firsthand the mixture that life presents of humanitarian action, how some people would combine that with political action, where espionage entered in. A lot of history makes these neat little boxes. And what I saw in life was that it's very messy. So in Suzanne Spock's story, it reflects that reality. Espionage comes into it. There are some marvelous British agents from the Special Operations Executive who come in and are involved with her network. But there's also Soviet espionage. There are captured Allied flyers who are imprisoned. So it's this really complex tapestry of wartime.
It, as you mentioned earlier, it did come to an abrupt, a horrible end. In October 1943, she was arrested by the Gestapo and taken to the prison in Fresnes before she was incarcerated. Now, the only thing I would say, she sounds like an amazing, amazing woman and saved lots of children. The only thing I would say in this situation is she had two children of her own. Shouldn't she have not put them first?
For me, that is the beating moral heart of the story. And, you know, as an author, you do not judge. And how on earth do you value your own two children versus perhaps 500 children that her network rescued? I mean, that is just impossible to think about. And for me, that is something that gives the story a great deal of drama. And, of course, interviewing her children was very powerful, but I also interviewed some of the children whose lives were saved. So, again, that's what I really see in this living history. It's not the tidy little heroic tales that end up in some of the movies. It's very, you know, people are making really terrific and terrible decisions day by day.
Yeah, it's different times, isn't it? It's easy for us to think how it should be or how we would think it would be now in 2018, but different times in the 40s.
Well, you know, Celine, I constantly wonder about that because a lot of times in our own lives we will reach a point where we'll look at a humanitarian crisis or a political crisis. And the question before us is, well, I may have a nice, comfortable life, and I may feel like there's a stable environment for my family. Do I stick my neck out to have an unpopular opinion or do something that won't be well received by the government I'm living under?
Mm.
And it may prejudice my family in some way. Now, probably not in such dramatic circumstances as Suzanne Spock. But I would say that for everybody, life involves a series of these choices where there is the rational thing that will profit us. And then there's this kind of bold, perhaps irrational moment where you benefit somebody else in a radical way. One of my other recent works was a play called The Guys. It was about the firefighters after September 11th.
Ah, okay.
And, it was done in the Edinburgh Theatre Festival, and there was a film of it. And going back to the same theme of the rescuer, I was spending a lot of time with men who stood looking at the World Trade Center buildings on fire and making the decision to go inside.
Mm. Yeah.
And they had families and children. So, I am not necessarily a person of that epic courage, but I do feel it's important for all of us to think about these choices as we go through life, and it also gives us a different relationship to history. It's not just these people on the pedestal. They're people like us.
Yes, they're normal people. They were normal people. Yeah, you're right. And when you interviewed the children, I'm not sure how old they were at the time that she actually died, But how were they? Were they angry that she'd put herself in this position and left them, or were they proud of her?
Her own children were definitely proud, and she was also, from what everyone said who knew her, other relatives and friends as well, just this vibrant, kind person who lit up the room. And she, you know, when her children and others talk about her, she lights them up too. Now, that's combined with these complicated feelings. My last book was about the anti-Nazi resistance in Berlin. It was called Red Orchestra, and I interviewed the children of a lot of people who were executed from that network. Psychologically, I found something kind of interesting, which was that part of them was frozen in that moment of trauma. So Suzanne Spock's children were 12 and 16 at the time of her arrest, and in a lot of ways, they were responding as young adolescents who hadn't quite finished from separating from their mother when they lost her.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. She did have the presence of mind. She obviously knew that this could happen, and it did, sadly. She had the presence of mind to give the list of the Jewish children and their addresses to an underground comrade. So before she died, that was passed on.
Yes, but that particular list has never been recovered. And there's been a lot of conversation among us, because one person said, oh, it was buried under a tree at her country house, but which tree, and so on. Mm. But her colleagues had another list, which was of various children, and some of the children on the list I have met. And that is in the collection in Paris at the Holocaust Memorial, Mémorial de la Shoah, there. And it's called the Grand Livre, the big book. So to see that original manuscript was very, very thrilling for me.
Well, I find it absolutely fascinating. I've been reading a lot about the sort of the early 40s, Jewish stories from the German point of view, from the Jews' point of view, etc., etc. I find it all fascinating stuff. And I'm really looking forward to reading Codename Suzette. Now, some others that you've written, as you mentioned, Red Orchestra, The Story of the Berlin Underground, and The Circle of Friends Who Resisted Hitler. What is going to be next? Are you going to write one about Colette?
I am hoping to turn my attention on my own country.
Oh, okay.
So I won't say more than that for the moment, but it's plenty to keep me busy here.
Well, wonderful. Well, do let us know, and we'll definitely look forward to having you on the show again. But this particular book, which is just out on the 4th of January this year, is called Codename Suzette, An Extraordinary Story of Resistance and Rescue in Nazi Paris, and it's by Anne Nelson, who we're speaking to now. And if we want to find out more about you and about your different books, etc., do you have any sort of website or Facebook page?
Yes, I do have a website, which is annewithan-nelson.com.
Wonderful. That's great. And we can buy the book now. It's out at good shops and online, I would imagine.
Yes, it is. And people should not be confused. The British edition is Codename Suzette. There's a different US edition.
Ah, okay. Codename
but
Suzette.
It's the same book.
Brilliant. I wish you lots of luck. Thanks for being on the show, Anne Nelson. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next-day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.